This is the Urban Connection, the weekly show on issues that affect the community.
Young men are struggling in a multitude of ways in today's society. First up on this edition of the Urban Connection, we'll talk with a pastor who's mentoring fatherless boys.
Looking around and noticing the decline in fatherhood, basically a cry and a need for help in terms of being able to mentor young men and just show them how to be men.
And then we'll hear the inspirational story of a young woman who experienced homelessness and abuse, but has emerged as a successful real estate agent, author, and motivational speaker.
Together, we've been able to overcome poverty and homelessness and all that entails, too, because being homeless is traumatic.
I'm Leonard Birdsong. The Urban Connection starts right after this.
Now, the Urban Connection continues. Once again, here's Leonard Birdsong.
Hello, folks. This is Leonard Birdsong, and this is the Urban Connection. We are here every week, and we talk to interesting people. Today, my guest is Pastor Eric Hawthorne, and he wants to talk to us about mentoring dadless boys, something that's very important. Thank you for coming on with us, Pastor Hawthorne. How are you today?
Doing fantastic.
You are a pastor at what's called the Daystar Deliverance Ministries, and you're in Texas. Is that right?
That is correct.
Is Daystar one church or is it a group of churches? I'm not clear on that.
One church.
Oh, it's one church. You are, as I understand it, a second-generation pastor. I take it your father was the pastor before you?
That is correct.
And what are some of the things you do in your ministry, and how did you come upon this notion about mentoring dadless boys?
Basically, being that I'm surrounded with, I've got a lot of brothers and sisters, a big family myself, and then just kind of looking around and noticing the decline in fatherhood made me think and understand that there was a basically a cry and a need for help in terms of being able to mentor young men to show them a better way and to just show them how to be men. Unfortunately, these days, now we've got a lot of kids that are having kids, and then in most cases, they end up being where the father is not there. So the lady, the mother, is always taking care of the child by themselves. And unless you have either a church or either the YMCA or the community, some kind of form of community help, then the boys are left to kind of like learn fatherhood, or, I mean, manhood on their own. And that's kind of a scary situation for the future.
And so you say, since 81% of all single parent households are headed by moms, this is why there is a real need for men to get involved with young males in their communities. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Because though women do a great job at raising boys, however, there's a certain element, there's a certain thing that is needed that comes to require the way God meant for it to be, for a man to be in part manhood into a boy, so where they can learn how to be men and know exactly how to carry themselves, how to treat women as well, and to not end up gaining too much of a female perspective without understanding having a balance with the two males perspective.
Now, you have two boys yourself. What are you doing to mentoring them? I don't know their ages, but what are you doing for your own children?
My boys, they're 13 and 11, and I'm hands-on with them and just making sure that I spend quality time with them. We go out together. We play games together. We read the Word of God together. I just basically want to empower them and to make sure that they know that Dad loves them and really just kind of live a life that they can basically mimic all the way around.
Yeah, well, those are formative ages, 11 and 13, and going into those teenage years is rough. Did your father mentor you?
Yes, I was very fortunate to have a great both parents, mother and father. My father was a great man. He went out and he worked very hard. He's also a pastor too as well. He imparted the Word of God in me, and she basically showed me how to treat a woman. I had, I was a part of I had four brothers and two sisters, and the way my father taught me as far as how to respect women, he told me never touch a woman, never hit a woman. Anytime that I even did anything toward my sisters, it looked like I was doing something to my sisters. You know, they'd cry help for him, and I was in big trouble. And so it was good to have a man role in a fatherhood to just really guide you and teach you those kind of things that just they're like me to these days.
Well, it sounds like your father did a good job on a big family there. I'm glad you're doing it for your boys. How do you want to get other entities into involved with this? You mentioned that you'd like to see the church be involved and maybe the YMCA. Is there anything else you can tell us about how you want to get this ball rolling?
The main thing is through church, and then because typically what I do is to tell all our congregation, especially the men, to kind of look out for the single parents, you know, whether it be just especially the single female parents that have boys, and they kind of like to especially take the time out to speak to those boys, to pour into those boys, and to let them hear from a man, hear the voice of a man, see the attributes of a man, where they can understand how to be a man, and to help those that mother, single mother, to be able to carry over those things, because you know, unfortunately, you know, they can only, like I said before, they can only raise them so much, but then there's a certain side where they have no clue, and they don't know how a man acts or thinks, so therefore it's very much needed. So I just try to tell them to, you know, make sure they always make a point to speak to them and to try to pour into them, talk to them, and get to know them and kind of be that mentor for them so they can look up to them and want to be a good man.
And how many people in your congregation or how many men in your congregation are trying to help you with this?
Typically, I just tell all my brothers to do that. We have probably about 10 to 15 men. We've got a small congregation, but when we have the different meetings, and I'm always telling them just to make sure that they, like I said, make a point that anytime we see any boys that are in our church that are without a father, to make sure they just talk to them and, like I said, spend time with them and just kind of see, you know, get to know them and find out what's going on in their mind, and to where they can kind of feel with a kid can feel more comfortable with them and have confidence to kind of like help them grow and to know that they can go to somebody else to how to live life and know which direction to go. We need the community also to help in where the YMCA could participate, or even see if we can kind of get any kind of city for fund that might be delegated to help in these situations for the single parenthood, where we can maybe get some volunteers through the community itself. And that was just one of the entities I was thinking could possibly be make a contribution in that regard.
Well, that sounds great. Do you have a website?
Yes, it is daystardeliverance.org.
I wanted you to give that to people because you don't know who's listening, and someone out there might be listening, might want to help you in this effort, which I think would be a very good thing.
Oh, great. We appreciate that. We just want to spread the gospel and help the kids become grown citizens and responsible citizens and make a good contribution to society.
Let me just go to some place that you may not want me to go, but I'm just going to have to do this. Are you going to screen these adults before they get into allegedly mentoring? Because, you know, a lot of funny things are happening these days.
Yes. As far as if I was to have any kind of specific program where, let's just say, for instance, who was assigning an individual or a man to a particular child, then we would make sure that they don't have a background check to make sure they don't have no bad cases against them. You know, with child molestation at an all-time high these days.
That's what I'm talking about.
And so, therefore, we would make sure that they're definitely a credible person, that they don't have to worry about crazy things happening.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're thinking about that. That's a very important thing these days. Now, you have your own two children that you are mentoring. Have you helped out with other boys in the community yourself?
Yes. I mean, thankfully, some of the other single parents in the church take them out to play basketball, take them to the recreation center, take them out to eat pizza, go in bowling, or what have you, and really make a point to always greet them every time when they're at services, just let them know that somebody cares for them, and to where they can kind of get some interaction and can hear a man and see how a man, you know, carries himself and so forth. So I make a strong effort to make sure that's exemplified so they can have that image before their head at all times.
Let me now go back and ask you about your book. Are you also a marriage counselor? Your book is going to be entitled, Are You Ready for Marriage?
Correct. I do weddings and I do marriage counseling. I don't have a degree in it as of right now, but that's definitely in the works. I got an associate's degree. They're looking to get a degree in theology as well as counseling too as well. But as far as the book is concerned, What I've done is that, because that's one of the major ministries of our church that we focus on is family. Family consists of marriages, and therefore we wanted to make sure that each person, before they even get into marriage, to know exactly what it entails, as well as those that are in marriage, to make sure they are enjoying the benefits of marriage and making sure they're doing everything they're supposed to according to the Word of God. And so this book that I chose to write is more or less just to kind of enlighten those, because it's kind of one of those things that everybody talks about. I want to get married, but they don't really know the inside of it. So I wanted to cover what the male perspective is, the husband, as well as what the female wife's perspective responsibilities are, so they both understand what they're getting into, and then if that's what they really desire, then they can really pray to God, and then also try to set goals to make sure that they are ready for that before they even say I do, and know exactly what to expect with a healthy expectation, not based upon what they've seen on TV, and, you know, because they can definitely paint the wrong image, and you have yourself going crazy when you get married thinking based upon a fairy tale.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot with it. I know that most people who've gone to seminary or school or become pastors, they do have some training with respect to marriage counseling. I've had people in my own family that have gone through that. You don't always have to have a degree in counseling, but I think that the seminary does a fair job in helping you with that. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yes. There's also, both my parents also being in the ministry for over 40 years in terms of being pastors and counsel many, many couples in their marriages and so forth, got a chance to kind of experience that as well as, like I said before, I've actually done several ceremonies. That's one of the, before I choose to marry anybody, I always sit them down and basically give them the expectations of what marriage is, and at least got to go through two or three sessions before I will agree to marry them, so they both know what they're getting into and won't be set up a situation for failure.
I wish you well. I really understand this about dadless boys. Certainly enough of our young African-American men don't have mentors, so I'm glad that you're doing this. Keep up the good work. Pastor Eric Hawthorne, thanks for coming on The Urban Connection.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you, Leonard, for inviting me.
Up next on The Urban Connection, the inspirational story of a young woman who battled through abuse and homelessness and eventually became a successful entrepreneur and motivational speaker.
More of The Urban Connection, straight ahead. Stay tuned. Now back to The Urban Connection. Here's your host, Leonard Birdsong.
Hello, folks. This is Leonard Birdsong back on The Urban Connection with you. Got a guest today. She's the founder and CEO of Invincible Vision. That's a family of companies in real estate, insurance, and business. Miss Graves, her name is Resurrection Graves, experienced child sexual abuse from 4 years old. And as an adult, she experienced homelessness as a single mother. However, she now runs a multi-million dollar enterprise and teaches people how to have invincible vision and go from morsels to millions. Miss Graves, it's great to have you on. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Let me first ask you about some of your early life. You were abused as a child. Can you tell us something about that?
Yes. At the age of 4 years old, unfortunately, there were two separate predators, as we will refer to them, that where I had an experience with child sexual abuse. And I did not realize how I was affected by the experiences until actually I became homeless as an adult during the last recession. And it really forced me to kind of take a look at my family dynamics and relationships. And I had to finish this memoir. And as I was finishing my book, you know, this memoir, I was just faced with some things that took me back to 4 years old. So it really, really impacted my life.
Yeah, I can see that. Now, were these relatives who were the abusers?
Yes.
Were they family members or people who were not family members?
90% of people that experience child sexual abuse, unfortunately, is at the hand of someone that is a family member. So one of those people was a family member, unfortunately, my father.
I see. Okay. Well, I don't want to go too deeply in it because it brings back bad memories, I'm sure. I don't like to hear of anyone that's been abused as a child, but you know, that's part of your early life. Let's move on to the fact that you did grow up and that you were homeless for a while and a single mother. Tell us about that.
Yes, so I was running a 2,000 square foot commercial lease space that held a massage company, very similar to your Massage Envy. And two things happened. One was Massage Envy, and the second was the recession. And between those two things, it was very difficult for me to continue my business. And so I lost everything. Some of it was good. I was in a relationship that I needed to lose, so that was great. But ultimately, my daughter and I became homeless, and we were homeless for 3 years. And there were some really amazing things that happened along that journey, but I would never wish it on anyone.
I'm sure you wouldn't. You talk about spiritual parenting. Can you tell us something about that?
You know, spiritual parenting to me is just having a spiritual awareness of what your child needs when. I think it was really important, especially when we were experiencing homelessness, to know what my daughter may have been going through, what she may have been experiencing at that time, and to try to be strong for her and to continue to just have faith that we would overcome it. I knew we would overcome it. That wasn't the question. The question was how. How are we going to overcome this? And obviously we did.
So how did you do it?
Well, one day I had an epiphany of sorts where I felt like I was led to go to a very specific homeless shelter. I get to the shelter. It was the same day that the Washington, D.C. earthquake happened. Which is, you know, it's normal in California, but not so normal in D.C. So that entire week, I ended up having to, unfortunately, sleep outside in my car because the shelter would not let me in. So I stayed outside right after the earthquake happened, Hurricane Irene happened. So that whole week, I was outside during a Hurricane Irene. At the end of that week, there was someone else that came and let me in the shelter. And once I got into that shelter, there was this person that was looking at me from across the room, and I just kind of skipped ahead. That person turned out to be my husband and the absolute love of my life, and together we've been able to overcome poverty and homelessness and all that entails, too, because being homeless is traumatic.
Yes,
so
I know.
So having to kind of work through all of that was paramount to us moving forward and building a life together and being super successful in our daily lives.
You now try to teach people how to have what you call invincible vision and to go from morsels to millions. Can you explain all of this?
Yeah, so, you know, invincible vision really came about because I was trying to figure out what is, you know, significantly different between me and, you know, some other people that may sort of do some of the same things I do. And for me, it's just always been a larger belief, you know, knowing that there's something bigger, there's something amazing out there that I was born to create or to be a part of. And, you know, I just have always had this invincible vision, and that's where it really came from. And helping people to tap into that is really a gift that, you know, I've latched onto, that I hold. And then, you know, really helping them to go from morsels to millions kind of explains my own story. You know, my mom was what I would consider to be working class poor. That means she got up every day. She went to work. She was a great citizen, paid her taxes, all of that. She came home. She had a home cooked meal for me, but we could not afford for me to, you know, we could maintain somewhere to live. So we weren't homeless, but I couldn't afford new shoes for school. Right. And so, you know, my upbringing, you know, was very much reflective of that. And then me having this larger vision of being a multimillionaire, being super successful, how was I going to do that? So I've been able to sort of crack that code in my own life. And I've journeyed and journaled my experiences along the way and been able to take along with me what those morsels were. And I pass them on, you know, to other people that I work with. So, you know, I do some business coaching, people that are interested in doing VIP days with me. You know, I have very specific sort of programs that I teach people how to go from worthless to millions. I'm really excited about that.
Now, much of your business is real estate, and you are in the Washington, D.C. area. You are involved in real estate, you say, for a 100-mile radius around Washington, D.C. Is that right?
Yes. So born and raised in Arlington, Virginia, sixth generation, have lived both in D.C. and Maryland, currently reside in Virginia, and have certainly been, all over the state of Maryland, all over, Virginia and D.C., and know them very well. My husband is also from the area as well, so we both have family just everywhere.
So are you selling houses or investing in houses or investing in real estate? Tell us a little bit about it. Like I say, I spent much of my life in the Washington, D.C. area, so I know something about that.
Yes, absolutely. So both. I am both an agent. I'm actually in the process of opening a brokerage. So I am both an agent and an investor. So I work with clients who are looking to purchase either primary residence or investment property. And then my husband and I are also investors as well. So we, on the investor side, we work with people who are looking to, whether they're starting out with townhomes or, four units, or if they're looking to make a big purchase like a 100-unit property. And then on the agency side, I never turn down, a deal. but I typically work with people that are in the 800,000, range, in terms of the price point of their home. Anywhere between, 700,000 to 800,000 is a normal, client, the majority of my clients. But, I'm always looking for $1 million listing, and I always love to work with people who are first-time home buyers that, may be starting into the market with $200,000 or $250,000 or something like that. And I do go all the way down to, Petersburg, and then in Maryland, if you can imagine, I go up to White Plains and Bryan Road and then Annapolis, so I have a pretty wide range. I like to drive.
Well, I guess you do. 100-mile radius is pretty big. Now, listen, this sounds real good, and I don't want you to give away any trade secrets. But how did you start getting into this real estate business? I mean, you're talking some big real estate when you're talking about $800,000 homes. How did you get into it?
So, really funny story. I had actually gone out. I was looking for my husband and I to purchase our first home. And I've always loved real estate, and I used to go into new construction properties, even like as young as 16, I can remember going into new construction houses and just saying, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And so I did. I went and got, my real estate license. And I always knew that it would feed a bigger vision, but I knew that at that moment it was important for me to do that. And then I just hit the ground running.
That's a great story. Yeah. I, from my own experience of being a lawyer, I probably think that you asked the right questions. Okay.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. People who ask questions and, want to know more about it, these are the kind of people professionals want.
Right, right.
Well, that's great. That means that you are an inspiration to other people, and that's wonderful.
Oh, really, thank you.
So, Resurrection, it's been great talking to you. I know you're
Absolutely.
Doing well, and I want you to keep up the good work, and I'm glad that I could finally get you on, okay?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
That wraps up this episode of The Urban Connection with your host, Leonard Birdsong, a production of Syndication Networks of Chicago. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of The Urban Connection.